Bressel in Carmel, California. This is tape number 358, and it's dated October 13th, 1978. It accompanies the tape that I have dated for the week before, and it's a continuation of the material. For those of you who subscribe regularly, this tape will just be mailed out to you together, for the 2 weeks' tapes together at one time. And those that subscribe later or order back issues can order them by the numbers. But I may as well mail these to you now because the material is a continuous series from what I did the week before. One reason I'm sending this material off at the same time is that I am going down to Los Angeles next week. I'll be away. It's the Jewish New Year's, and I'm going down to be with my family. My father's a rabbi, and I go down there, if I can, for the Jewish New Year's. And it's Yom Kippur. That's a Jewish holiday where they have a large memorial service in the names of the people who passed away in the past year, or members of families that have passed away are named. And there's a long list of well-known Jews who have passed away in the year, past year, who are named in the memorial service. And it's kind of a coincidence here that this particular tape I'm sending you coincides this litany of deaths of witnesses to the John Kennedy assassination. But I'm just wondering if there isn't something in my background where I began to become aware of large numbers of people of dying in 1 year, or hearing that list every year, because the way I did my research was begin to add up how many people related to a different topic died, or how many rock musicians died, how many people, for example, in the first tape this week or last week in the Vatican, other people are adding it up. And I think if this adding procedure had been done, say, in Nazi Germany, when people began to disappear from the towns and villages, assuming people cared enough to keep a record, they would have come up with some interesting figures before they got to the 6 millionth person, if they had just added up the missing and the people taken away and never seen again. And I think the adding of those people, it was always stayed in my mind that if people had begun to add up the missing people earlier, there's no way that they could have gotten to the 6 million figure, the pile of bones that they ended up with. And I think the same thing can be applied to the witnesses to the John Kennedy assassination, the direct witnesses, the fringe witnesses, the family members. We have to examine how much did these people know, if they were thrown out of cars, if their throats were cut, if they fell out of buildings, if their cars were blown up, the circumstances under which each of these people died. I haven't gone into detail. A lot of them you can get from the 4 volumes of books from Penn Jones' book, Forgive My Grief. And he has a newsletter that goes out every month called The Continuing Inquiry. And Penn has been the major source for many of the deaths that many of us around the country wouldn't pick up if it weren't for Penn Jones. That has been his real specialty, is keeping track of these deaths. We owe him a debt for that. And I think it's important to keep these lists. I have a list of witnesses to the Manson family that were murdered, to the Robert Kennedy assassination, to the Martin Luther King assassination. Then you can begin to add countries. How many people in Lebanon are dying, in Pakistan, in Kenya, in Paraguay, in Argentina? How many are missing in Chile? How many are taken off and never come back? How many people are on a genocide plan? You know, articles on genocide, articles on the takeover of the country. It begins to start with, say, one person in my particular case studying John Kennedy's assassination, and then getting information about RAND studies of killing 63 million Americans to release our energy crisis so there'll be enough of our natural resources for the remaining population. And then going to the chemicals of IG Farben that were made, the slave labor they used and the chemicals they used over at Auschwitz, and realizing that IG Farben is in the United States and all over the world, and because they were never punished before, they have the capability of repeating what they did in Germany and making the dyes and the chemicals to erase large numbers of people. So I imagine the accumulation of deaths, of bodies piled up, is in direct proportion to the crises which occur, the depressions, and the necessity to hold on to corporate holdings without building houses and schools and health care for the mass population and feeding the population. And it's very easy when you have a lot of things to say, well, there's too many of them, they'll take it from me. There's too many Mexicans, CIA says, get rid of 40 to 60 million. That's one of their plans. Then dig up all the oil resources you have. It's nice to sit back and figure, well, the world's too populated, so I have it now, and there's too many of them, and I don't know them anyway. They're too far away, so forget the whole thing. But what you don't realize is large cities in the United States and all over the world that may contain you and members of your family are going to be wiped out through chemicals and gases. I absolutely believe that if we don't stop it. And I got into those matters when I was studying the Kennedy assassination. So as I read off these deaths of these various people from the tape last week and a continuation of that, I take it very seriously. I think about the holidays and the memorial services. I think about plans that this government has for those kinds of contingencies of too many people on the earth. And therefore, each name that I'm giving here as a possible witness to the assassination of John Kennedy or Lee Harvey Oswald in the basement, somebody who knew Jack Ruby, was at the site of the assassination, a newspaper person who knew too much, a government employee, an agent that was involved that had to be killed because the investigations were coming, the agents that were hired to do some of the killing. As each one of these people are knocked off, the sum total keeps getting more gross, and then you realize just how strong the media is to cover up, like Mr. Karamessian's death. Very few people saw it last week. Three direct witnesses to the House Select Committee died last week. Their names aren't mentioned. Nothing is said. It's a serious thing, so that each individual named on these lists is an important person and helps create the sum total of what those in power intend to do and how they get away with it. And a lot of these deaths are very public, like mafia deaths, as a warning to other people. You know, the shootings in the mouth and being found dead, these hunting incidences of William Sullivan, highest man in counterintelligence in the FBI, Division 5 of the FBI, shot, and the person who shot him isn't reprimanded. The son of a policeman shoots one of the highest men in the FBI and gets off with losing his hunting license and a little fee. So I'll continue with the names of the people that died, but the importance of them, I can't emphasize enough. It goes back again, that book by Seymour Melman, how 400 deaths in Germany, I don't know how they came to that figure, but 400 had to be killed before Adolf Hitler was elected in 1933 to make Hitler's regime possible. And I'm sure that of those, many important people were killed, and then the people next to them had to be murdered. Either they were used to set the time or the place or to set them up, and they had to be murdered. And so death is a very much part of keeping the conspiracy silence, and this is why I put death on the priority list of things to look into before you get into even the evidence of the assassination of John Kennedy or Martin Luther King. Well, Ed Kendricks is one of the witnesses that died. I'll get back to that list. Donald Kaler, he was a former chemist for the Warren Commission. You wonder if he were alive if his findings would be different than those chemists and ballistics experts they pulled in 1978. Jim Keough, he was in Jack Ruby's apartment the night Ruby was arrested. He died of a karate chop to his neck, similar to David Ferry, who also died from that kind of a chop. Of course, all three men that were in Jack Ruby's apartment died shortly thereafter, one in a police department in Long Beach. Karen Capsonet knew of an early link of a conspiracy. She's alleged to have known links of Sam Giancana to the CIA assassination teams. She comes from Chicago, and 2 days before John Kennedy was to be killed, she heard a conversation about that. I believe her father's a writer. I met a man in Hollywood when I was down there working with Terry Moore on a book. I think I mentioned him way back on other tapes, who was very knowledgeable about the murder of Karen. But he said quite clearly, I'm not going to talk because my uncle was Sam Giancana, and Giancana had just been murdered the year before. And he said, I was brought up in Brooklyn. He mentioned the section, and he says, we don't talk about those kind of things. I'm not going to talk about it, but she was murdered, and he knows who did it. And the gentleman who was talking happens to be a very well-known producer in Hollywood now of films and TV series. You'd all know the series if I mentioned the names. I think you'll have to excuse my voice and stuffy nose. I think I'm coming down with a cold, and of course, the tape picks it up faster than I can really hear it myself, but I feel it. So I'm sure that you're getting those sounds of a cold coming on. David Lane worked with Jack Ruby, worked with the pre Castro Gambling Syndicate in Havana. He died in 1964. Eugene Locke, a well-known attorney, well-known to John Connolly. Also, Marguerite Oswald knew John Locke, the attorney. He resigned as deputy ambassador to Vietnam. He was John Connolly's first campaign manager, and he was the attorney for Officer J.D. Tippit's widow, the man that Lee Harvey Oswald allegedly shot. Before the assassination, he was the attorney for Mrs. Tippit, and he was going to run for governor of Texas. He died in 1972. Alfred McLean, Ruby's associate, another one of the pre-Castro gambling syndicate. He was in the clubs with Frank Sturgis and Santos Trafficante, and would have some tales to tell about these events that have been discussed on radio at the House Select Committee. But as you can see, as I run down the list, that many of the witnesses who could be called are dead now. Marilyn Magyar, an employee of Jack Ruby, she was at the Carousel Club. She was going to write a book on the assassinations, died in 1966. Ronaldo Masferrer, I mentioned his companion that was killed. They were killed, automobile blown up. CIA agent, worked with the anti-Castro Cubans, worked with all the exiles involved in the JFK assassination. He was at the No Name Key base. He was in the CIA and associated with Frank Sturgis and E. Howard Hunt. Mary Pinochet Meyer, a close friend of John Kennedy's, close links to the CIA and counterintelligence, aligned with James Eagleton, and was closely, had direct personal contacts with John Kennedy, could possibly either get information from him or be linked to him as another one of his females after he was killed. But James Eagleton is alive. He's one of those witnesses that should be called and asked some questions. But she died in 1964. Dr. De Lesseps Morrison, a New Orleans mayor, ambassador to the original, the Organization of American States, links to Guy Bannister, who died, who also had close associations with Robert Mayhew, the FBI, and the CIA in New Orleans. Betty Mooney McDonald is one of the better-known early deaths in 1964, the stripper for Jack Ruby, who provided an alibi for a man that she was with who had been accused or suggested of killing Officer J.D. Tippit. Frank Martin, a police officer, he told the Warren Commission, "I know a great deal." He lived until 1966. Audie Murphy, the famous war pilot, war hero, had high links to the Howard Hughes Organization and to Jimmy Hoffa. He was trying to get Hoffa out of jail. Terry Moore, the actress, knew Audie very well and thought that he was murdered. He had been visiting La Costa, where Jim Braden is a charter member. Jim Braden is the gentleman that was recognized by police, I won't say arrested, at the time of the assassination. He was in the Dow Tech building. We'll do more about Jim Braden. Jim Brading, Eugene Brading is his name, active with Mo Dalitz and the La Costa organization in California. And Audie Murphy was working with Hoffa and these people at the time that he died. Joseph Miltier, he was mentioned at the House Select Committee hearings. He's the gentleman who had the tapes that said that John Kennedy was going to be killed. There'd be a high-powered rifle with a scope attached. It would take place. It was supposed to take place in Miami, and they were going to set up a patsy. He's a member of the right-wing extremist group, and as I mentioned on the preceding tape about the Minutemen executing John Kennedy, this could be one of the links of the Minutemen to the Miami plans. And then Miltier was seen, a face that looked exactly like Miltier was in Dealey Plaza, and the House Select Committee chose to excuse that it wasn't Miltier because this man is shorter than Joseph Miltier. They didn't go into the features with their anthropologists, or they didn't get out many, many pictures of Miltier or the statistics on his size, but when it served their interest to say that this man was too short to be Miltier, then they ruled out that it was him. When they wanted Lee Harvey Oswald to be short or tall, or any of us, they said we could all vary 1 to 2 inches every day. Our heights just seem to go up and down, which is interesting. And they also said cameras on dollies can change heights. So I'm sure they could have arranged Mr. Miltier to be 6'1" if they wanted it to be some particular person, a Cuban or a friend of Fidel Castro's. If he were down there on his knees, they could make him 6'1" by arranging the camera or the dolly, or the anthropologist would come in. But in this particular case, Miltier couldn't possibly be in Dealey Plaza, according to this House Select Committee of 1978. as against the Warren Commission that never even entertained the idea of going into Eugene Brading or Joseph Miltier, even though they had the tapes of the assassination plans 3 weeks earlier in Miami. They still chose to make Lee Harvey Oswald the lone assassin in 1964, and they'll do it again in 1978. Ronald Curtis McLean lived at Beckley Street, where Lee Harvey Oswald lived. He had knowledge of Lee Harvey Oswald. He was murdered and left in an abandoned mine shaft. I got this information from a man who's in prison right now at Folsom Prison, who knew Ronald Curtis McLean and came to me with information on the assassination. George McGann died in 1959. He knew Jack Ruby in gambling interests, and he knew H.L. Hunt and his relationships to Ruby. He was a friend of Billy Saul Estes, and he knew Richard Nixon, and this man was gunned down in Lubbock, Texas. Louis Nichols died in 1977, just a year ago when these commission hearings were getting formed. He worked under J. Edgar Hoover. He was in the Bureau during the JFK assassination. He died of a heart attack. I grant you that some of these people, like Lyndon Johnson and J. Edgar Hoover and Louis Nichols, were on in years, but during their entire lifetime, they were never pressed for the information that was available. And even if they had lingering deaths or heart attacks, I mention them because the circumstances of where they died, who they died with, or their wills seemed that there was some hanky-panky in their deaths, and that's why I bring them in. Charles Nicoletti, from organized crime, Chicago area, worked with Sam Giancana, Santos Traficata, worked with the anti-Castro Cubans and the assassination teams that Robert Mayo set up. He's a name that is not brought in when the news media or the House Select Committee talk about Sam Giancana or John Rosselli. They don't bring in that Charles Nicoletti died just at the same time as did Carlos Prieto Siqueiros, George DeMorenshield, William Sullivan. There was a nest of deaths all taking place at one time, and they zoom in on Rosselli and Giancana and ignore the other deaths of people that all knew each other and were all related to each other. Robert Navarra, he made an abortive attempt on Castro's life. He worked with the CIA and FBI, the anti-Castro Cubans. He died in 1964. Orville Nix, the gentleman that took the pictures on the grassy knoll at the time that he died in 1972, I believe it was in Penn's book, that he said that he may have shown pictures of the firing over there on the grassy knoll of a person in the bushes. And when the House Select Committee did their camera work and tried to see if there were figures in the leaves, there was one figure that they discounted by the curb, but they did in fact see a man with his hands and face exactly where the discussion was among the critics that this person would be. Of course, the media, this is where Nina Totenberg and Joe Volch come in, and the newspapers come in and say, but they're not sure he was holding a rifle, but there was in fact a man. So what would be a rifle might be a stick, and that sort of swept under the rug. That's one of those pieces of information that's choking them that they have to put under the rug. Karen Bennett Carlin, Ruby employee, known as Little Lynn. She was the last person that had been with Jack Ruby. She died in 1964. I have Alexander Onassis down here, a United States pilot from Ohio, was put in jail in charge for sabotaging his airplane. Alexander Onassis and his father and Marie Kalas and the entire Onassis group. I am very positive, know too much about the John Kennedy assassination. And of course, the reason that Jacqueline Onassis stays alive, and we'll go into her at length at another time, is I'm not certain that she isn't a big wheeler or dealer. She and her sister, the Princess Radziwill, are very important to world politics, and that's why Jackie Onassis stays alive. She's as important as the Duke and Duchess of Windsor with their Nazi connections, wanted at every social party. She is the cover for the beautiful people, and to set the pace, she's the last person you suspect of wanting John Kennedy killed until you read what happened to her and you've read some of it and some of the motives. And she has a motive as good as any single wife I know who's ever killed her husband. And she has the means, and the people around her have all died. And she's gotten her payoff. I mean, just a lump sum from Onassis was $26 million. But that contract was written before they ever set up that marriage. Lee Harvey Oswald died, or his double died. I put that With a question mark, one of them died, and one of them was buried, and one of them was ordered to be cremated. And if there, in fact, were two, one is alive. And I have mentioned before, and we'll go in at length about doubles at another time, I believe, from information I got, that one was flown to Baton Rouge and down to Brazil, disguised under the cloak of the Mormon Church as a missionary, and is still alive today, unless they killed him when he got down there. But that's another subject. But one of those Oswalds is dead, in fact, dead. Robert Lee Perrin was the husband of Nancy Ling Perrin, the gentleman that fled Dallas, Texas, in a hurry because of the links of Jack Ruby to the military and DeVito Genovese of organized crime. You notice how Santos Traficana came on the radio and at the House Select Committee talking about assassination teams, but we didn't see Carlos Marcello, and we didn't hear the name Vito Genovese except once. George Piazza, an assistant to District Attorney Jim Garrison, he was on the way to interview a witness in 1967. He died. Lieutenant William Pitzer took pictures of the JFK autopsy. He was threatened, don't tell what you know. He died shortly after John Kennedy in 1966. He was in the Navy 28 years. He retired a month later and after his 28 years, and he was found with a bullet in his head. Gary Powers was one of the primary witnesses that died in August of 77. He said that Lee Harvey Oswald had a role in downing the U-2 flight. Gary Powers would have to have worked under the Vice Admiral Taylor, Rufus Taylor, that I talked about. Just when the committee started getting their money and funding, this great flyer was killed over Los Angeles in a weather reconnaissance plane. Freddie Prinze is mentioned in George O'Toole's new book. He had the Abraham Zapruder films. He was working on the John Kennedy case. Freddie Prinze was with Dr. Kroger, a hypnotist from the Los Angeles Police Department, who worked in the Chowchilla case. He was suicidal. He was on Quaaludes. He was on the same drugs that were given Donald DeFries that changed his personality in Vacaville. And when he went home, the doctor handed him a weapon, and Freddie Prinze went home and put the weapon to his head and killed himself. Now, that is unheard of. I know many people have been confined to hospitals. I've had direct experience myself with family and friends and studying this research. When a person is suicidal, you have the right to take them, even if they object against their wishes. If they're a danger to themselves as well as to any other person, you can take them to a hospital and have them confined. The psychiatrist can do it. The sheriff will come and put handcuffs. If there's any indication they're a danger to themselves, they can be put in at for 48 hours, I believe it is, or 72 hours. Freddie Prinze was working on the John Kennedy case. He was with a man who works with the police department, has worked in other conspiracy cases. Famous people, actors, I'm sure there's not too many of them into the Kennedy case, but they would lend a lot of respect or money or energy if they were able to talk about the conspiracy. But Freddie Prinze died in 1977. Paul Rygotorodsky was a man that worked in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, worked with the Anti-Communist League, the Tolstoy Foundation, the Solidaris, the CIA, the conduit of the CIA Greek Orthodox Church that took care of Marina Oswald, brought her to this country, also brought the Sirhan family from Palestine when Israel became a country into Pasadena in 1957. Paul Rygotorodsky died in Texas, and he was an associate. He knew very well George de Morenschild. And 1 week after Rygotorodsky died, George de Morenschild, who was teaching at the University in Texas, fled the country. He just took everything, left, went to Europe to Willem Altman's place, and then went to Florida where he, in quote, shot himself in the mouth after massive electronic treatment. He had electroshocks at Parkland Hospital. He had psychiatrists that I'm sure that were telling him, George, you kill yourself and the world will be better off. Why don't you kill yourself? I'm sure that he was programmed. The gun was in the drawer. He knew where to find it, and he blew his brains out. But his flight and his fear, his fear of being killed and being in danger, followed 1 week after the death of Paul Rygotorodsky. And Rygotorodsky's name is in the Torbett document as having a compound down at Tyrol Bay with John Conley, and Albert Osborne was there, various agents from the defense industry agencies, and Osborne was on the bus going to Mexico with Lee Harvey Oswald. I'm repeating some of this occasionally so that I hopefully have a fantasy that it'll finally sink into a lot of people's heads just exactly what is going on and why John Connolly's on the stand. And they don't ask him about Tyrol Bay or the School for Assassins in Oaxaca, Mexico, or the organization he belongs to, and if he has links to Permandex, or the Defense Industry Security Command, and then investments and interests in the Friends of Middle East to cook up a few holy wars over there when the Vietnam War scales down and we have control of their narcotics traffic and weapons industry and so forth, then we get over to the Middle East to pick up a little more action. When I rattled off several weeks ago the problems I had with the committee, and I'll get more specific with you, having the right person on the stand and asking the wrong questions, a perfect example is having John Connolly on the stand and not asking him if he ever knew of Paul Rygotorodsky. John Connolly wants to run for President of the United States in 1980, and I suggest that you go to the library and start collecting a lot of information and get out a book on John Connolly, information like I did with the Evel Younger tapes. And all of you, when I say get a book, write your own mimeograph sheets, make 10, 20, 30 copies, and send them to various members of Congress, and try to stop the fantasies of John Connolly being president, or he will be president, just as Gerald Ford on the Warren Commission was president of the United States. Robert Robertson was the owner of an airplane, along with Hobart Higgins, who died. He knew Jack Ruby. Higgins had died strangely, and Robertson said all of the troubles go back to the John Kennedy assassination. He had told people he would not live a week, and he was dead the next morning. Jack Eugene Ramsey died. He was alleged to have assisted in the escape of one of the assassins, and he may have been involved in the manhole theory. Harold Russell was an eyewitness to the Tippit murder. He was beaten by the police wielding a revolver. He died in 1965. Earlene Roberts, I mentioned before, ran the rooming house where the Harvey Oswald stayed on Beckley Street, and her sister, Bertha Cheek, was in contact with Jack Ruby, offering him a large sum of money just prior to the assassination. George Rockwell, another well-known American Nazi Party official, died in 1967. His name was in Lee Harvey Oswald's notebook, the name and address. John Rosselli, of organized crime, you've heard that name. It was brought up at the House Select Committee. John Rosselli and Sam Giancana's names will be legend, and I just doubt if these other names are as famous. Well, Dorothy Kilgallen, you know. Then there's Jack Ruby, who died in he was sick in the Dallas jail. He died at Parkland Hospital. As I told you, there was a Warren Commission memo that while they were writing the Warren report about him, they had to be cautious because, in quotes, he's still dickering for his fate. And that, again, reminds me of the hearings where Richard Helms is saying that the CIA has a memo on Yuri Nashenko on whether or not to send him to the loony bin or liquidate him. Perry Raymond Russo, he testified for Jim Garrison in the trial against Clay Shaw. He had a cerebral hemorrhage, similar to David Ferry and others. Clay Shaw died in 1974. Jim Garrison was saying from 1967 until Shaw's death that he was in the Central Intelligence Agency, but only after Watergate did the links come out of Shaw. He had Howard Hunt and the Watergate members, and he died quickly, and there was no autopsy, quick embalming, and he was buried. Mrs. Earl Smith, her husband was a former U.S. ambassador. She was a confidant of Helen Kilgallen's, and she died the day after Dorothy Kilgallen died. And Dorothy had told friends that she was going to break the story of Kennedy's death. Dr. Mary Sherman was associate of David Ferry. She was a key witness in the New Orleans trial for Jim Garrison, shot to death in New Orleans, and the body was burned. Carlos Prius Siqueiros, an important witness in 77, one of those 1977 witnesses, the former president of Cuba, named in the Torbett document as being a big wheel of blending the gambling syndicate and the Cubans with the white Russian community. He died in Florida, May the 5th, 1977, one time a business associate of Jack Ruby's. John Stiles died in a car crash just at the time that Gerald Ford's hearings were coming up to be president of the United States. This was April 16, 1976. He wrote the book for Gerald Ford, The Portrait of the Assassin, which is a book made up from CIA documents and FBI documents, creating a fictitious person of Lee Harvey Oswald and hoping that that version of history would last through the centuries. There are a few more deaths to run down, and I didn't realize they'd take this long, and I hope they're of interest to you. I'll put them on the other side of this tape and then go into some destruction of evidence that was important, and we'll continue on in the weeks with Maureen Oswald and other information on the House Select Committee. Another Sullivan that's important besides William Sullivan is a woman, the wife of Mr. Jack Sullivan, who was killed, and a friend of hers is vowing to open this story, and I'll do an entire tape on this story maybe in the near future, but it involves Sedona, Arizona, a place that she says does mind control, and this woman who brought me the information said that Jack Sullivan had taken a yellow pill and then began the altering of his personality in the contacts of military people, and that he was involved somehow in the John Kennedy assassination.